Hello, and welcome to this podcast presented by the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs.
Regular SACPA session. I'd like to remind you to turn your cell phones off if you can figure out how to do that. That would be appreciated. My name is Tom Kane, and I'm acting today as your moderator. And I'll remind you that the session is being recorded as usual. The cost of the lunch, there are one or two people that were new coming in the door, so it is $11. And you drop that in the basket on your table, and somebody magically becomes the auditor of your table. So I don't know who appoints auditors. I hope it's not a political process. But it's supposed to magically turn out that the money in the basket matches how many people are at the table times 11. So if you think you can handle the math, be the moderator at your table. SACPA is a volunteer nonprofit organization, as you know, and it relies on contributions of members and session attendees to continue the work. Memberships are available from Lisa today, and the annual meeting's not far away, Thursday in June 19th. And reminders have just gone out to renew your membership. And it's getting ready for the 50th anniversary of this wonderful institution. So we would hope that you would join up and possibly come to that meeting, which is a precursor of getting ready for the 50th anniversary. We thank our usual partners, the University of Lethbridge, Country Kitchen Catering for great lunches, and to Shaw TV for broadcasting sessions, XU 83.3 FM Radio Live, and thanks to the Herald and to CTV Global and the radio stations that come on a regular basis. Our format today is our usual one, where we have 25 to 30 minutes for the presentation by our speaker. Then we have lunch, and then we have a question period beginning at 1 o'clock, finishing at 1:30. So when this session was announced, I thought it was kind of interesting. It was announced that our speaker was going to be Brian Mason, the NDP leader, and MLA for Edmonton, Highlands, Norwood. But then it went on to talk about him as a member of the Legislative Assembly. And did they know anything that you were going to resign after the first announcements came out about this? It looked like SACPA had almost an inside story. But they didn't leak it to the Herald. So did they? I don't think so. So we welcome you, Brian, today. And his topic is burning issues facing Albertans from an opposition MLA's perspective. That's the part that caught me. It wasn't from the leader of the opposition. It was an MLA's perspective. So that's what you're about to become again. So we look forward to your talk when you do that. By way of introduction, I thought maybe a different kind of introduction today because Brian has served us as an Alberta politician for 14 years, and he's been in public life for 24, 10 years as a member of the Edmonton City Council. So a special welcome today. And the welcome, I remembered a conversation I had when I went to, in the late 70s, we were really a demonstration area for people with disabilities in Lethbridge, the first of 10 experimental areas in Canada. And several of us went in a delegation to the Canadian Association of Community Living meeting in Ottawa. And on those occasions, that meeting moved around city to city. But when I went to Ottawa, the leaders of the various political parties would meet with us and cabinet ministers and so on. And I was lucky enough, I think, at the time to sit in on the meeting that was held between Alberta delegates and David Lewis. And David Lewis is well known in the NDP, or was known for a long, long time, and his son Stephen Lewis sort of picked up where he left off and has done wonderful things. And I found out that day that David Lewis was quite articulate. That shouldn't have surprised me. I should have known better, but I didn't know a lot about him before I met him. So he knew that not everybody in our delegation was carrying an orange card. This was previous to the orange wave hitting Alberta or hitting across the country. Well, maybe it hasn't hit Alberta just yet. I think there were a lot of blue cards in people's pockets. There were some red cards. There were no green cards. It was pre-green. So he was pausing when he sort of wondered, what should he say? We asked him for advice. Instead of asking his opinion on some things, we asked him for some advice. How do you bring issues about people with disabilities to the attention of politicians? And he was a good enough politician to pause before he spoke. And he thought carefully. And then he said, you know what you could do? You could appeal to our decency. And I thought, wow, that sort of caught our attention. What on earth does he mean? So he went on to explain what he meant. He said, when most politicians start out their career, they're going in with decent motives. They come in and they want to do decent things to make their country or their province a better place. And then it wears on them day after day when lobbying groups, and in Ottawa there are many lobbying groups that are in touch with them almost every day, about often in opposite directions. So they've got to size up the lobby groups, and what does that mean? And partisan politics comes into it, he told us. And then there's the events of the day that happen randomly around the world that they have to pay attention to. Now, that doesn't quite apply as much to Alberta, but we do live in a very global village, so what happens around the world happens and affects Alberta also. So what he said was, if you come in with people with disability issues, appeal to our decency. Remind us that that's why we're here. And it shouldn't be a partisan issue. And my point is, I don't think any real issue should be a partisan issue. Since when do the people there not take a decent look at the issues and say what's best for all the people? So I think I would like to introduce you today, Brian, as a decent politician. So, please.
Well, thank you very much. As a politician, being called decent is high praise indeed, I think. Sometimes we're not held in very high regard, and sometimes some politicians don't deserve to be. But I am very pleased to be here to be invited again by the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs, which I think is a remarkable group of people who are very, very involved in and interested in and active participants in the civil society in Southern Alberta, in Lethbridge. I think it's unique, and I believe that it has made a significant impact to the level of political awareness that exists in Southern Alberta. And I appreciate very much the work that you've done over the many years, and the opportunity to come down from time to time and talk to you. So the session, the fall session, I'm sorry, it's spring now, isn't it? It's hard to tell the difference sometimes. The spring session of the Alberta Legislature ends today. It's been a remarkable session. I think there are a number of things that that stand out about that. First of all, it's a session in which the Conservative government has been in a very serious and prolonged crisis. It is finding it very difficult to continue to operate as it has historically. And the departure of Premier Redford from the Conservative leadership has not ended the discord that we see, and we are seeing a government that is very much, in my view, in a very serious problem. And it has a beneficial effect, because it means that it's possible for the first time to force the government to do things that it doesn't want to do, or to stop them from doing things that we don't want them to do. And I think the golden key process that's taken place here shows that with strong, well-organized community activity around a clear issue, and backed up with effective work by opposition parties in the Alberta Legislature, that you can actually affect real change. And make no mistake about it, if the Conservatives were not afraid of losing their seats in Lethbridge, I think the Gold Key project would have continued. I know that the company withdrew it, the government didn't intervene at this stage, but I think that the writing was on the wall. and the company got the message. So congratulations to all the people of Lethbridge for their excellent work in stopping that project. I think you deserve a round of applause. There was another major victory that was marked in this session of the legislature, and that is the government's decision to refer Bills 9 and 10 dealing with pension issues in our province to a standing committee for public hearings. Now, that does a number of things for them. It gets it off the agenda until the new leader is chosen, and we believe that certain leadership candidates didn't want to have this kind of baggage to deal with. Bills 9 and 10 are very serious problems for pensions. They're an attack on public sector pensions that would effectively have converted the pensions from a defined benefit type of plan to a target benefit type of plan. It would have reduced the ability to deal with problems in terms of the finances and the unfunded liabilities of the plans, and ultimately, in our view, would have resulted in smaller pensions that people had to work more years to get. And don't think that if you're not one of the four public sector pension plans that you wouldn't have been affected, because Bill 10 is the companion bill. And Bill 10 is a bill that allows the government to work with employers in order to convert existing plans for that are defined benefit plans into target benefit plans. And that would have directly affected many plans, including a number of academic pension plans, which I know some of you may be enrolled in. So it is another critical piece of legislation. So we were successful through a filibuster, first in slowing down the passage of this legislation. We took them till 2:30 in the morning one night, and then they gave up about 11:30 the next night because we conducted a systematic filibuster. And we worked very closely with the Liberal MLAs on this. And we also reached out to the Wild Rose Party, and we had their support at least for Bill 9, but not for Bill 10, in helping to slow down the legislation. And there was, a very active community campaign organized by the public sector unions that campaigned hard. They mobilized their membership. These plans affect 250,000 Albertans, not just provincial employees, but municipal employees, police, healthcare workers, library workers, and so on. And so there was a very major mobilization. Again, it shows that with outside, if the community is well organized and has a clear plan, and they work closely with an effective opposition in the legislature, that victories can be had. So I want to just trace a little bit what's happened in politics in the last little while. And I'll go back to the last election. And in the last election, of course, Alison Redford and the Progressive Conservatives promised what was, in fact, a very progressive platform. We looked at it. There was some very significant promises that were made. For example, the elimination of child poverty within 5 years, full-day kindergarten, sustainable and predictable funding, including increases for both health care and education. There was a long list. In fact, we actually added up the cost. They didn't provide any costing for their promises, but we costed their promises for them. And we found that they were promising $7 billion of new program spending. And they identified no way that these promises were paid for. So we knew right away that these promises would not be kept. They couldn't keep them, not without dealing with something that they've refused to deal with, and that is the level of taxation and royalties in our province. They simply did not have the revenue to meet their promises. So it was clear the promises were not going to be kept. And sure enough, shortly after the election, we heard the phrase bitumen bubble for the first time as a reason that the government was unable to keep its promises and a way that the government could pretend to be surprised that it didn't have the money to pay for what they had promised the people of Alberta. So that broken promises budget Broken Promises election was followed by a budget that actually broke the promises. And it included very serious reductions in programs, including programs for children in poverty, a major attack on post-secondary institutions, $147 million cut in the post-secondary sector, and very few promises that were actually kept. In fact, the latest promise to be broken just happened this last week when the health minister, Fred Horn, announced that the government would no longer be building 140 family care clinics across the province. They're going to build 9. So that, I think, represents just the latest example or instance of this government breaking its promises. In the second year of the government, government's agenda, government's mandate, they shifted gears a little bit. The last year has all been about attacking public sector workers and their unions. So we saw, for example, the attack on the Alberta Union of Provincial Employees with Bill 45 and 46, taking away their right to pursue binding arbitration, taking away their right to speak about strike action, imposing massive fines, far greater fines for a union taking an illegal strike action than you would ever, that any legislation allows them to bring against any corporation for any violation of environmental laws or improprieties and so on. The penalties were simply massive for that. So that was the first stage. Then they legislated an agreement on the union, imposing 0, 0, and 0, and that follows on what they did with the teachers as well. They imposed, by legislation, a contract on the teachers that included 3 years of no increases as well. So then that was followed up with Mr. Horner, the finance minister's, proposals to reduce pensions for the public sector. And again, it was going to be imposed by legislation, and I mentioned our fight in the legislature on Bills 9 and 10, which ultimately has been successful, at least for the moment. And then the last salvo from the government against public sector workers was a report of Jeff Johnson's task force on teaching excellence. Now, instead of addressing issues of classroom size and inability for school boards to budget and to provide the necessary supports for special needs students and so on, the government has decided that the problem with education is bad teachers. And so they've struck a task force to look at how we can impose more rigorous discipline on the teachers and at the same time take away the professional responsibilities of the Alberta Teachers Association to ensure that teachers meet the standards of their profession. So they've now picked a fight with the Alberta Teachers Association. At the same time, they seem to be making nice with AUPE and some of the other unions that they've offended. But it really comes down to the government having a very focused moment. You know, there's a saying that nothing focuses the mind like a hanging. And the government is facing just that with its ratings now in public opinion in the low 20s. This is a government that is rapidly heading for defeat. The agenda, the twin agenda of broken promises and attacking the public public programs and then attacking the public sector employees, I think was a suicide mission. And I think they are finally realizing. But I believe they may have gone too far and realized it too late. We'll see. I'm going to talk a little bit now about what we think the future direction of this province should be. And there are 3 main points that I want to talk about. First of all, we need to fix the fiscal situation in the province and get our finances on a firm footing so that we can afford the programs that Albertans want and provide them on a sustainable and steady basis. Secondly, we need to establish and reform the social services that the province performs and ensure that they're provided in the best possible way to deliver value for money to the public, but also to make sure that the services that Albertans need are there when they need them and that they're affordable. And thirdly, we need to build a strong economic future for the province in a way that I think is quite different from what the Conservatives want to do. First of all, let me talk about the fiscal crisis that we have in this province. Have you noticed that despite us being the richest province in Canada, when the price of oil goes down, we have to lay off nurses and teachers? There's something wrong, and it's not going to be fixed by crossing your fingers and hoping for higher natural gas prices next year. There's something that really needs to be addressed here. And I'll just go back a little bit to the history. In the early 2000s, we had very high natural gas prices in the world, in Canada. And it brought in very, very significant royalty revenue to the Alberta government. At its peak, there was $7 billion of royalty revenue from natural gas alone flowing into the coffers. And it really helped to make Ralph Klein look like a financial genius because we had big surpluses every year. He took advantage of that, and Stockwell Day was the provincial treasurer. He introduced the flat tax, and that is eliminating the progressive nature of the income tax so that everybody paid the same rate, 10%. And they did increase the personal exemption at the same time, but we did a little bit of research on the impact of the flat tax on individuals based on their incomes. So an Albertan with an income of $70,000 pays $1,434 more in tax than they would in British Columbia, and they pay $919 more than they would in Ontario. So what they did when they arrived at the flat tax at 10%, they actually raised the tax rate on middle-income Albertans. So they pay more than they would in other places. But if you have an annual income of $1 million, it's a little different. You will pay $41,095 less in taxes than you would if you lived in British Columbia, and $75,157 less than you would if you lived in Ontario. So you can see the effect of the flat tax on income distribution and social equity in the province. It has a very corrosive effect there. But the other thing is that it has a serious effect on government revenues. It reduces tax revenue from income tax, personal income tax, very dramatically. Can you give me a number, Shannon? $2 billion?
Yeah.
Okay. Shannon Phillips, as many of you know, is a researcher for the Alberta Federation of Labour, and she has more numbers in her head than I have in my bank account, I think. So she says perhaps $4 billion less revenue as a result of the flat tax compared to the progressive income tax system that we previously enjoyed. So that didn't matter because we had all of this money flowing to us from natural gas royalties. Then when Steve West replaced Stockwell Day as the provincial treasurer, he decided to cut corporate income tax, which was 15.5% based on the paid on profits of profitable corporations, and he proposed to reduce that down to 8%, and actually they've moved it down to about 10. So about a reduction of a one-third in corporate income taxes, and that also, I think, is worth... I think it's $1 billion or $2 billion of lost revenue there. So you can see there's a huge gap now in our revenues. Well, what's happened is they found lots more natural gas, and so the price of natural gas has come down, and we don't have those gas revenues like we used to have. So now we're dependent on some mix of gas and oil revenues. In fact, In Alberta today, 30% of our program expenditures are paid for by non-renewable royalty revenue. And that is very volatile revenue. And that's why when the price of oil or gas goes down, we have to lay off teachers and nurses, and we make cuts in our post-secondary system, and we find savings in programs for seniors and for the disabled. And that's wrong. We have to fix that, so we have to address the question of the flat tax, of the corporate income tax rate, and as well the royalty rate. Alberta, of course, receives, as I'm sure most of you know, some of the lowest royalties in the world. Alaska, under Sarah Palin, changed its royalty structure for oil there. And they raised the royalty rates. The oil companies all threatened to leave the state and never come back. Well, they're still there. We did a little bit of a comparison. Actually, we used Alaska's numbers because they looked closely at Alberta's royalty system when they made their changes. At $100 a barrel, Alaska will collect 60% more in royalties on a barrel of oil than we do here in Alberta. And that's a Republican governor that stood up to the oil companies and got a bit more of a fair share for the people of Alaska. Norway, as you well know, has a higher royalties on their North Sea oil and have now saved that in a fund, a $600 billion fund, compared to the static $17, $18 billion in the Heritage Savings and Trust Fund that hasn't increased markedly since the days of Peter Lougheed. So we need to do that. I think that's a very important piece that we need to look at. Secondly, we need to get our social services, our public services, on a solid footing. And I mentioned the family clinic situation. What happened is that the government, basically to get a deal with the doctors that was satisfactory to them, agreed to back away from the family care clinics and continue to promote the primary care networks that they've poured billions of dollars into already. The problem is there are two different means of delivering health care. And if you have PCNs, which are doctor profit or profit-driven, doctor-owned healthcare delivery, versus public healthcare, which would be the family care clinics, you have an enormous duplication. And we certainly think that family care clinics are a far better way to deliver primary healthcare in our province. Long-term care. The government has a policy of shutting down long-term care beds and replacing them with private and lower level of care beds. That's a very serious problem. We have a serious shortage right now of long-term care beds, and people back up into other levels of seniors' housing and care, and so people aren't getting the care that they need. That's very important. People are also occupying primary care beds in hospitals, which are very expensive and badly needed, and that exacerbates problems in the healthcare system. It drives up costs, and it creates backlogs in emergency rooms and so on. Mental health is a major area where we are extremely deficient. There's a recent report called the Gap Report that was released identifying the gaps in the mental health care. People are not getting the care or the treatment that they need. They're being given medication and put out on their own without proper attention. They're occupying primary healthcare beds in hospitals instead of receiving the kind of care that they need. We need to address in the healthcare the whole question of governance and budget. We've said all along that Alberta Health Services is unnecessary. It's a duplicate bureaucracy. You have the Department of Health here, and you've got Alberta Health Services here, run by it's a corporate-style delivery model, and it has a corporate board of businessmen and women that operate it, and it's created nothing but problems, as you are well aware, in terms of expenses and bonusing and so on. It's a duplicate and dysfunctional structure, and it should be abolished. And we also need to deal with The question of the budget right now, because Alberta Health Services controls so much of the budget, $12 billion, nearly a quarter of the provincial budget, is set by this board of unelected officials. And that does not come before the Legislative Assembly. So we don't have the authority or the scrutiny over that particular budget. When we see Alberta Health Services budget, it's $12 billion, it's just six lines in the budget. Just like one page, and it's impossible for the Legislative Assembly to do its job, which is to scrutinize government budgets and expenditures under that system. So that certainly has to change. In terms of education, we need to return to clear guidelines for class sizes. The government is now saying that class sizes don't matter to the quality of education that children receive. That's a complete reversal of their position several years ago when the Learning Commission's report was adopted by the government. So it's a complete reversal and moving backwards. That is a critical thing. We need to empower school boards and give them control over their capital budgets, because many schools in our urban centers, and I believe in rural Alberta as well, are not getting the kinds of things they need. They're working on 100-year-old boilers. They have huge problems with their roofs, their windows. I mean, I've toured some of the schools around the province. So we need to let the school boards decide how to spend their capital money so that they can maintain existing schools. So, for example, Galbraith School here has been on the Lethbridge School Board's capital plan for over 10 years, and the province has refused to approve the money to bring that school back up to where it needs to be. And the last piece under schools and education is we need to have a real focus on accessibility. And that means ending school fees and making sure that tuition is affordable. We're proposing a 10% reduction in tuition fees and then a freeze thereafter. The last thing, the third thing that I wanted to talk about is the economy. And the direction of the government on the economy is, I think, a serious problem. The economy's booming, but it's more like a gold rush than a sustained economic plan for the future of the province. Most of the jobs that are being created now in oil sands development and extraction are construction jobs. And there's going to come a point, and it may just be a few years away, when the industry as a whole has said we've reached the optimum capacity in terms of the extraction and export of bitumen and other petroleum products in the province of Alberta, and we don't need any more. And then we're going to see a very serious problem in our province, because most of this is driven by construction. They're good jobs, but they are temporary jobs. Very little is being done to ensure that we add value to the products that we produce before we export them. And particularly that means upgrading bitumen here in Alberta rather than allowing those jobs and that investment to take place in Texas or potentially in China. So we're not against pipelines. Alberta needs pipelines to export its products. We're against the use of pipelines to export unprocessed bitumen and all of the jobs and investment that go with it. So that's a critical piece as far as we're concerned. And there are a number of things that we proposed, including an additional royalty on unprocessed bitumen that would help make it more economic for the companies to build their upgraders here. There are billions of dollars being invested right now on the Gulf Coast in the United States in order to create the kind of industrial infrastructure needed to upgrade Alberta bitumen. I don't know if Keystone is going to get approved or not, but if Keystone were approved, then the plan is to ship the bitumen to the Gulf Coast in the United States, refine it into diesel oil, and then re-export it to Europe. And so they'll make all the money. You know, they'll resell our bitumen after they've upgraded it, and they'll make the lion's share of the money from that process. Secondly, we need to look long-term, and we need to make a substantial investment in renewable energy. And we proposed, through higher royalties, to establish a $20 billion fund to invest in technology and commercialization of the technology for wind, solar, and geothermal. And other countries are far ahead of us. Europe is light years ahead of us. The United States, especially in places like California, is very far ahead of us. And China is investing billions of dollars a year in research and development of renewable energy. We are basically stuck with a horse and buggy in 20 years, and it's time to rethink that. I think it's very important. We need to do a far better job on environmental protection, and I've been telling the government this for many years. I raised this when Klein was the premier. I think that it's a serious problem. How's my time?
Can you wrap it up?
I've got pages and pages. No, I will wrap it up. So ultimately, because we have been so bad in the environmental sphere, it's given us a terrible reputation internationally, and it's costing us investment and jobs. And finally, my last point in terms of the economy is we need to support the arts and small business as important economic generators, both of them. So I have a little bit to say more on the next election and the political situation, but maybe that can come up in question period. So thank you very much for your attention.